Hey, yo, back with you on the Leader, Dieter Kurtenbach, hanging out with you all until 10 p.m., and we're hanging out with our good friend Akash Anavarthan of Niners Nation, going to talk all things 49ers, Packers, and Akash, like, I'm having a hard time seeing routes where the Niners win this game. It's not to say they can't. They're certainly talented enough. They got the dudes. But Rodgers is so good right now, it's almost as if you just have to pray he doesn't play like Aaron Rodgers to win this game. I'm sure you've looked at it from a different perspective. You're your own man. You're not just stealing stuff from everybody else's opinions. You do your own research, much like Aaron Rodgers, but to better results. I'm interested in your perspective as to how the 49ers win this game.
Absolutely, and I think Bill Belichick said this a long time ago, especially when you get this far into the playoffs, you know, it's a matter of finding, you know, the opponent's weaknesses and trying to go after them and just hiding your own weaknesses. And so I try to do that every week with the 49ers opponent. I'll try to, you know, dig through numbers and see defensively and offensively where they're weak and where they can attack. And I absolutely see a path to a 49ers victory that doesn't involve an Aaron Rodgers collapse.
Okay.
The Green Bay Packers have one of the worst rushing defenses in the NFL. So since week 10, they're 27th in rushing defense DVOA. They're 27th in rushing defense EPA per play. They're 32nd in rushing defense success rate. And they've allowed the most explosive run plays that go for 10 yards in the NFL since week 10. So there's absolutely a path to victory that involved a lot of Elijah Mitchell and a lot of Deebo Samuel. I said this earlier, I think the Cleveland Browns actually put out the blueprint for how to beat the Green Bay Packers. I think it was a Christmas Day or Christmas weekend Saturday game where Cleveland went into Lambeau. And they rushed for 219 yards on 25 carries. They won the time possession battle. I think they really held Aaron Rodgers' passing attack down. I think he only had 200 yards passing in that game. If it weren't for Baker Mayfield's four interceptions, the Browns probably win that game by double digits. So there's absolutely a blueprint here that the 49ers can execute, but it's going to have to start up front with that offensive line and their running game.
Now, obviously, that is something that is music to Kyle Shanahan's ears, and certainly he's been looking for that route as well. When you say that the Packers don't have the numbers stand out, but like when you watch the film, what is it about their run defense that's so abysmal?
I think it starts with their defensive line. Unfortunately, in that week 3 matchup on Sunday Night Football between the 49ers and the Packers' defensive line went after the 49ers offensive line. I thought Kenny Clark in that game was fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about this before. The 49ers offensive line and really their offensive identity kind of shifted gears in the second half, and they became this physically imposing run-heavy offense that we've just come, you know, become used to. And if they're able to put that kind of on display on Saturday, I think that, you know, that would be their advantage. I think that defensive line is really where they can control, the game. The Packers linebackers, both, you know, Devondre Campbell, I think he's an all-pro, if I'm not mistaken. He was one of those free agent additions this season. He's been fantastic. So, and then their corner and safety play is also really good between, you know, Darnell Savage, Ursul Douglas. I think Jaire Alexander is going to be back this week. So they've got, you know, other good defenders, but I really think it starts with that defensive line. And that's where, you know, if you're Trent Williams, Laken Tomlinson, Tom Compton, some of these guys, you just got to be, you know, got to win your blocks, win your matchups one-on-one. As Laken Tomlinson says, it's trench warfare. And if they can win there, I think the 49ers can control this game.
On the flip side, the 49ers defensive line, it has to have a good game. And it was great against the Dallas Cowboys. That Cowboys offensive line has fallen off significantly, but you had backups having big games, and you know, even with Nick Bosa out, the Niners looked like the 2019 edition with the amount of pressure they were getting on Dak Prescott. Obviously, that's the formula again for San Francisco in this and any other game, particularly against Rodgers. If you don't pressure him, you don't stand much of a chance. But if Nick Bosa is unable to play. And right now it looks as, you know, 49ers are optimistic. There are external reasons that we've seen to be optimistic. But if Nick Bosa is unable to go into this game, is it reasonable to expect the 49ers defensive line to repeat what they did against the Dallas Cowboys, against the Green Bay Packers?
That's a huge loss. And it's one thing losing Nick Bosa in the second quarter of a game. Right. You know, you can shuffle some guys around. The Cowboys, you know, weren't necessarily prepared for that, et cetera. But it's one thing not to have him going into a game. I feel like that kind of just takes a toll on a defense mentally, right? Not having your best defensive lineman out there. But like you said, I think I'm optimistic that Bosa's going to be able to play. I saw earlier he was watching practice with his helmet in his hand, which is a good sign. But we really won't know probably till Friday if he gets out of the concussion protocol. But defensive, pass rush-wise, the 49ers only got 7 pressures and 1 sack in that Week 3 matchup, which is just not going to cut it. For comparison's sake, the last 2 weeks they've gotten 27 quarterback pressures and 10 sacks. So they've really gotten after the quarterbacks. One of the reasons for that, Aaron Rodgers got the ball out really quickly. I think his average time to throw in that game was 2.4 seconds, which was the second fastest of his season. So clearly Matt LaFleur and Rodgers came in with his game plan of let's get the ball out quickly. Let's not sit back in the pocket. And they were able to run the ball well in that game. I think they had 25 carries for a little over 100 yards, I believe. The 49ers run defense has really been, solid. In the second half of the season, I'd argue they have the best run defense in the NFL. And so if they can, limit A.J. Dillon, limit Aaron Jones on early down, and you force the Packers into these third and longs, then you can have some, success rushing the passer. I would say some key differences. Arden Key only played 3 snaps in that first game, and all of those were at edge. Charles Omenihu, who's really come on as a depth piece, wasn't even on the team. Eric Armstead was primarily playing at defensive end. Since he's been, moved over to the three technique spot inside, he's been fantastic. Yep. Samson Ebukam's really come on as of late as an edge rusher. So I think the defensive line as a whole is just a better unit than they were in September. And I think they're going to wreak more havoc against Aaron Rodgers. Now, will it be enough? I'm not sure. Aaron Rodgers, when he's kept clean, eviscerates opponents.
Eviscerates is the right word. Yeah.
So you have to get pressure. That's kind of the only way you're going to slow down that offense.
Talking to Akash Anavarthan of Niners Nation, one of the big changes, too, is that the Niners played a lot of man-to-man in that game in Week 3. And you can go through the personnel stuff, and it is all exceptionally valid. It's probably not worth diving into sort of the scheme stuff when you're dealing with such different personnel from, September? September to now. I mean, just completely different sport, essentially, given the temperature changes and all that. At the same time, the Niners played a lot of man, and as you noted, they've been so good second half of the season. They really just dove into being a cover three team right around the time of that Rams game where they got everything right back on track. And Rodgers tears up any coverage, but the cover three stands a chance if you can get home with 4, because you can put 8 in the box. You can put your linebackers in space to make plays, both in the pass game and, of course, in stopping the run. The guy that's huge for me in this game, because, again, this is now a cover three team, and I would expect them to be a cover three team again against Green Bay on Saturday, if for no other reason, then you should probably stick with what you know. If you're trying to get funky in the divisional round of the playoffs, Aaron Rodgers will burn you. The guy who's key for me, and he's been key for every game under this scheme, is Jaquaski Tartt, because so much is asked of him in this defense. What have you made of Tartt's play as of late, and in particular the safety combination with him and Jimmy Ward?
The safety combination for the 49ers, Jimmy Ward and Jaquaski Tartt, I think might be the most underrated safety duo in the NFL. I know they don't get the volume stats, the interceptions, the fumbles, the turnovers, et cetera. But they just play such sound football on the back end. They're a huge reason why the secondary has been playing better kind of as the season's gone on. And honestly, they're very interchangeable. And if you watch the 49ers defense closely, sometimes Tartt will be the single high safety. Sometimes it'll be Jimmy Ward. Sometimes they'll both be too high. And, in certain coverages, they'll roll Tartt into the box and he'll act as an extra third linebacker. And I think one of the things that goes unnoticed is how you know, how smart of a player Jaquaski Tartt is. And I had tweeted out a clip from a couple weeks ago where, you know, Tartt, you know, recognizes a concept that the opposing offense is running mid-play, and it was like a double post concept, and he alerts Jimmy Ward as the play is going on so he can roll the coverage over. And, you know, those are the kind of things that obviously don't show up in the box score, but they're so fundamentally sound. And you're absolutely right. They're going to be vital in this matchup. Just, you know, playing over the top of Davante Adams, Alan Lazard, and Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and, you know, being able to make the sound tackles, not giving up extra yards after the catch, things like that. So I think they're going to be key, just like you mentioned. And defensively, I don't think there's, you know, one scheme or one coverage that you're going to be able to throw at Aaron Rodgers to slow him down. He's probably seen anything and everything, just given his experience and given how, you know, football savvy he is. So it's just going to come down to, can the 49ers rush four? Can they get home with four consistently enough where they can, you know, use those extra guys in the back end? And
when you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Akash, we saw the duality of Jimmy G on Sunday. Certainly, we cannot see the same quarterback we saw in the second half come Saturday, lest the 49ers lose this game. Is it just as simple as Rodgers is a better quarterback than Garoppolo, and there's the game right there? Or do you really believe it's more complicated than that? And just what's your confidence level with Garoppolo heading into this game, just as an observer?
It's definitely more complicated than that, because the 49ers are now 3-1 in playoff games under Kyle Shanahan. In those three games combined, I think Jimmy Garoppolo's thrown for 375 yards passing combined in those three wins. And on Sunday against the Cowboys, he had 39 yards passing in the second half. I think it was 5 of 11 for 39 yards. And he was really bad, honestly.
Really
and
bad.
If they had lost that, if they had lost that game, you know, given how he played in that second half, he would have kind of been, you know, everyone would have kind of been blaming him or pinning the loss on him. But since they won, it kind of just gets, you know, swept under the rug a little bit.
Right.
And so, like you mentioned, it's just been a roller coaster, right? In that first half, he was, you know, efficient. He was effective. He was executing the offense. The ball was on point. And then, you know, obviously has the shoulder injury, and then things fell apart in the second half for him in that offense. And they just cannot afford that in Green Bay. I you know, the turnovers, the quick three and outs, you know, getting the ball back to Aaron Rodgers in that offense, they're going to punish you for it. So I think it's going to require a clean game from Jimmy Garoppolo. I do think if Elijah Mitchell and that rushing attack is able to have the kind of success we expect, then, you know, there's less pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, you minimize the volume of number of pass attempts he has to make. You know, the fewer times you're in 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, you know, the more potential for success for this offense. And I think that's the key. So hopefully your goal is to put, you know, less on his plate and more on the running backs.
Talking to Akash Anavarthan of Niners Nation, is there anything more that Deebo Samuel can do to win a game for the 49ers? I've run out of ideas for Deebo Samuel. I'm wondering if you have any, because he's been do-it-all Deebo for the last couple months now, and really top performance, arguably, of the season last week when he's averaging, what, 7.2 yards per carry and out there like a true running back. I mean, he's out of this world, but I'm curious if you see any more room for, probably not improvement, but let's say exploration.
I'm not sure how he could possibly get better, just given the way he's playing down the stretch. I mean, the 26-yard touchdown run he had on Sunday, that's a play that the 49ers call often, right? They go, you know, split backs, they just hand him the ball, and they say, you know, it's a run to the edge. And the Cowboys had that defended pretty well. I mean, Debo had nowhere to go at one point. I'm like, this is going to end up as like a 1 yard gain or 2 yard gain. And next thing you know, he cuts up field and his, you know, acceleration from 0 to 100 is unlike other given his size, right? Given how he's built. And he turns on the Jets and he scores. And there was an Inside the NFL clip that went viral. And if you watch the full thing, he speaks with running backs coach Bobby Turner after that play. And Bobby Turner basically says the same thing. And it's like, I had no idea how you were going to be able to cut that back. But it's just, you know, Deebo Samuel's vision that's able to make those things happen. And he just has such a natural feel and instinct. It's just one of those things. It's like a God-given talent that's, you know, hard to coach. And he just has that. And, you know, going back to that week three matchup, he only had two end arounds that went for 0 yards. And I would imagine he gets 9-10 carries in this game. I would imagine he has the same level of impact. And I just don't think that the Packers will be able to practice for that this week. I don't think they have someone on their team that can replicate what Deebo Samuel does in terms of the speed, his vision, his ability to force missed tackles. And given how the weather is, given how cold it's going to be, it is going to be tough to tackle 19 for the 49ers.
Kosh, one final question for you here. I posited earlier today on Twitter, and this was my mistake for even bothering, but that obviously a few weeks ago, this team's number one need going into the offseason would have been a starting cornerback for this team. Opposite Emmanuel Moseley or opposite Ambry Thomas, somebody else, if not two other people, had to get in there to shore up the 49ers defense for the 2022 season. A couple of weeks later, I'm legitimately not sure that that's a necessity anymore. It's certainly not the top necessity in terms of upgrading at cornerback with the starters. What can you say about what Thomas has been able to do, what Moseley is, and where that ranks for you in terms of off-season needs, hoping, of course, for 49ers fans everywhere that the off-season doesn't come anytime soon?
It's amazing what happens for a team when their pass rush starts to really kick into gear and how naturally the pass defense and the secondary just starts to look better.
Yeah.
And I think it's a product of both. The pass rush obviously has gotten better, like we've talked about. But at the same time, getting Emmanuel Moseley back has been huge. Ambry Thomas's development, you know, Corey Unlin, who's the defensive backs coach, has done a great job with Thomas. His confidence has seemingly just increased. I remember on that first opening play, he got up right in CeeDee Lamb's face after I think Prescott threw the ball away. And so you could tell his confidence growing week to week. Unfortunately, I think he has a bone bruise in his knee. So not sure if he's going to be suiting up. That would be a major problem if he's unable to go, because that would mean Josh Norman on the field. Which is just bad news for the 49ers defense. But, you know, back to your question, I do think corner is a need. I think the 49ers can't go back into the season relying on Moseley and Thomas. I do think they need to either search out veteran depth. I doubt they go and attack the market and sign, you know, like a high-end veteran corner, you know, a star corner. Uh-huh. But I do think they add veteran depth behind the players that they have. But like you and I chatted about, I think slot corner is a big need.
Yes.
I know a lot of 49ers fans love Kaywan Williams, and he's fantastic in the run game. He might be the best run defender in the slot. Excellent blitzer. But, you know, as we chatted, in man-to-man coverage, you know, he's just not the same athlete he once was, which is understandable. And so teams have been picking on him in coverage, and the Cowboys went right after him last week. You know, they put Amari Cooper in the slot. 49ers went single high, and, you know, they just ran a slot fade, and Kaywan Williams in man coverage, and he's just chasing Amari Cooper. The Packers did that in their first matchup. They put Alan Lazard, probably their fastest receiver, on Kaywan Williams and said,
you know,
hey,
you know who the Packers love to put in the slot. If they see man-to-man, you don't think Davante Adams is going to slide on over?
Absolutely. And so it's just a bad matchup. There's a reason that, you know, when the Rams roll out Cooper Kupp, the Niners drop Jimmy Ward into that spot, and they try to keep Kaywan Williams away from that matchup in the slot. So I would say there's corners definitely in need. I would say, you know, that's priority number one. It looks better than it did a few weeks ago, I'd say, but I would still definitely prioritize adding depth there. That and probably, you know, the right side of the offensive line are the biggest question marks for me.
Hey, man, Tom Compton is forever. As much as we can bash him because we're just like, it's Tom Compton. This can't be good. Dude's been absolute nails. Now we can have another conversation about about the right guard any other time. Dan Brunskill, if he's not playing Aaron Donald, seems to have some issues. But, hey, if the Niners win again this weekend, I don't know what the hell we're going to be talking about. Because at that point, they become team of destiny. And we're just going to ride the wave all the way to Valhalla. Akash, thanks for coming along with this ride for us. Always great insight. And let's do it again on the other side, win or lose.
Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
The great Akash Anavarthan of Niners Nation. The K-1 thing is accurate, and I'm really interested to see how the 49ers handle the fact that Davante Adams rolls into the slot. And listen, they played a lot of man-to-man, as I said, in the first time these two teams met. Obviously, personnel has become tremendously different between that game and what will be happening on Saturday. But sometimes a matchup's a matchup. And I'm certain that Green Bay, even though most coaches usually only watch the last couple of games from a team, when you're in the playoffs, you're watching years back, right? Because you're looking for anything that can be a tell. And especially too with trick plays, you know, when everything's on the table, you need to have a comprehensive understanding of your opponent. So coaches go in deep for playoff games. So they're certainly watching the game that these two damn teams played against each other early in the season, if not all the games that they played against each other for the last couple of seasons. So I think that they're going to note, Green Bay will note that San Francisco played a lot of man. They'll note that that is not the norm. They will be able to differentiate between the two. And I think that we're going to see at least one matchup between K'Wan Williams in the slot, who will probably be dynamic and awesome against the run and super great, but we're going to see K'Wan Williams in the slot against Davante Adams in the slot in man-to-man coverage once. And Green Bay might wait all game to find that opportunity, and I'm really curious to see what happens when that opportunity comes, because if K'Wan Williams can win that down, improbably, but if he can win that down, I'm going to feel a whole lot better about the San Francisco 49ers. So maybe they should get it out of the way as soon as possible just to establish the tone for the rest of the game. Regardless, we have a tone that we need to set here on this show, and part of it is, hey, we got to run some ads, okay? So maybe we'll reconvene, and we'll get this thing back on the tracks on the other side of these messages. Kurtenbach with you until 10 on the Sports Leader.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.